Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tverkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
This is Absolutely Intercultural, the podcast about all things intercultural. I'm Anne Fox, and this show is coming to you from Denmark and is a bit longer than usual. We are free. We are on iTunes, we are on Facebook, and we are on www.absolutely-intercultural.com, where you can find all our podcasts. We started in 2006, exactly 10 years ago. We started in March 2006, and this is our 200th show. Along the way, we've collected a few awards, such as the EduBlog Award for Best Educational Podcast in 2006 and the European Podcast Award for Denmark in the non-profit category in 2010. So, how to celebrate? We thought it might be fun to get in touch with some of the people from our very first year. And so, in this show, we'll be speaking to Indra in Lithuania, who was in our very first show talking about the scandal caused by a Lithuanian basketball player wanting to marry an Israeli woman. How did they fare? We'll also be talking to Stefan Bazan, who still lives in Lebanon 10 years after we spoke to him during the 30-day conflict with Israel. How are things now, we wondered. Better, surely, than during the war.
I would say the war was better in a way than what happened in Syria and brought those 2 million people in the country.
And back to Lithuania. How many Syrian refugees do you think there are in Lithuania?
So you're not saying that you only have 4 refugees in Lithuania, are you?
Yes, we do.
Really?
Really.
Okay.
Maybe it was just coincidence, but the two people I contacted for this show were much more concerned about the wider political situation than in talking to me about their personal circumstances. And it was clear that the conflicts they were talking about were actually different sides of the same coin. I can assure you that that was not planned. In our first segment, Absolutely Worried, we'll be revisiting Indra Seputiene, who was in our very first show talking about a proposed marriage across religious boundaries. I started by wondering, how did things go for that basketball player and his Israeli girlfriend? Also new in the 10 years since we last spoke are Indra's children, who we hear in the background.
You were on our very, very, very first podcast show.
I do remember.
Yes.
It was quite an experience.
You were talking about the scandal of, was it a baseball player?
Yes.
Oh, basketball player, sorry.
Basketball player, and he, now he's divorced.
Oh, all that trouble for nothing.
And has his second wife. Has his second wife, who is not Lithuanian also, but she's from USA.
All that gossip about him and his Israeli girlfriend at the time, 10 years ago, it was all for nothing because now he's divorced her.
Yeah. But that's interesting because the divorce also happened because, I think, cultural things.
Oh, really?
Yes. Not because love was over or money over, but just she wanted to stay at Israel.
What are Lithuanians concerned about right now?
Recently, of course, a lot of information about refugees, our relationships with Russia.
Mm-hmm. So that's still an issue.
Because of war in Ukraine. We are strongly with Ukraine and trying to help them in all possible ways. Mm-hmm. Of course, our neighbors don't like that. I mean, Russia.
Mm. Oh, I see.
We still want to keep strong positions in Eastern European, and it's very obvious.
What are people thinking about the refugee problem in Lithuania?
People are afraid of refugees because we don't have too much colors in our country, you know. It's all green trees,
yeah.
or white people. I'm sorry, yeah. To say that.
Yeah.
And we are afraid of, because not so many information about those people. The stereotypes are that we are mostly coming here for economical reasons, not because of the tragical war over there. And mostly think that we are thieves or just murderers.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes, but we are coming here to rape our women, and, you know, those concerns are sometimes so ridiculous, you know, and, yeah. And the saddest part is that not so much information to neglect that.
Okay, so people are making a picture of the refugees in their minds, just based on what they imagine, not on real facts. Is that what you're saying?
What do you mean, real facts? They think that we have real facts because on TV, then you have news. You never can see refugees who are building houses. You can hear about refugees who are doing something wrongly,
yeah,
like something in Sweden, like something in Germany, and mostly information is coming so very negative.
There are a few direct experiences that people have in Lithuania where they can say, oh, it's working out okay, and these people are quite nice and hardworking.
That's true, that's true. And, you know, the thing was that just before the new year, we've got four refugees, a family of refugees, and we came here to Lithuania, and after 1 month, this family just asked to be accepted as refugees, but not newcomers, migrants, you know, because we have better rights than.
Oh, I see.
And that was, this information was taken as, you see, we want just only to have monies. We are not doing anything for their country or for us. We just came here to take their monies.
Yeah. So you're not saying that you only have four refugees in Lithuania, are you?
Yes, we do.
Really?
Really.
Okay.
But it's not our... Yes. Yes, we have only four refugees, official refugees, officially just only four refugees, and we brought them from Greece.
I see. Okay.
You looked a little bit astonished.
No, I thought this was just an example of four refugees, but you're saying that's the whole refugee population in Lithuania. Okay.
No, we do have some migrants from Vietnam or from Ukraine. We have some refugees from Ukraine, and that's, those people are accepted with love. And people are waiting to help them. Just a lot of things happens for to support Ukraine, you know. So I see that neighbors are more closer than those somewhere in Asia, in some Syria. Where is it? You know, and we are not coming to our neighbors. Yeah. We are coming to some Lithuania. Why?
Yeah.
Nobody understands that.
Okay, so the Lithuanians understand the Ukrainian situation better.
We do.
And have sympathy for it, and therefore are very open to welcoming the Ukrainians.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we went through that. We know we are positioned so, so good because we lived in that period 25 years ago.
Yeah, of course.
And
yeah.
We can understand them so correctly.
Yeah.
But not Syrian.
Yeah. That's very interesting. That's very interesting. So you need a shared experience in some way before you can extend your sympathy and empathy to other people.
I guess so. And we even have a saying, a proverb in Lithuanian, that your t-shirts are always closer to your body. That means that something what you already know or somebody whom you know already are more closer than somebody who is just far, far away.
That makes a lot of sense. It's very true.
So people are afraid of what they do not know. In fact, this is borne out by an OECD study which concluded that the countries where immigrants integrate best are those places which have the most immigrants. Sounds obvious, but what Indra tells us shows us the truth of this. In our next segment, Absolute Stalemate, we'll be talking to Stefan Bazan in Lebanon. Last time we talked, there was bombing in the background. Surely things are better now.
I mean, it's been 10 years. When I got your message, I was like, oh my God, this was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And wow, then I reflected on my whole life. Then.
Because when we talked to you 10 years ago, it was to report a short war with Israel.
Yes, yes, actually. That was the, I don't know the official name of it. I think it was the 30 Days War, something like that. It was actually a conflict between... a real, like, full-scale war between Israel and the Islamic resistance called as Hezbollah.
Yeah.
And in itself, the Lebanese government was really not really involved in the fighting, and the army was not involved in fighting. So it was just like Israel bombing Lebanon to avoid people to moving around the country. And yes, this is the last time I talked to you. There was right in the middle of this 30 days conflict that actually sent Lebanon back 10 years in time.
Oh,
in
dear.
In terms of destructions. And I think something like 1,000 family people got killed in the fighting. Yeah. But it was just for 30 days. So it ended up, and now we have like some sort of a ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon, and things haven't changed on this side of the conflict. Mm-hmm. But now we have the new big conflict, which is Syria, which is right next to our door too.
Yeah.
So this is what has mostly changed in 10 years, I would say. Like the war changes from one place to another.
And how has this affected Lebanon? You're still there.
Yes, I'm still there because I'm not Lebanese. You don't become Lebanese. It's not easy to actually get your Lebanese passport. But I've been here for 16 years, and now I have my kids in school. My wife is a teacher, and we have a house and everything. So yes, it's my country. It's where I live. But I would say, like, every year there's something more. That makes it more difficult to actually decide every morning to stay in this place, especially because of the Lebanese internal conflicts have always been there, and now they are like there's like a vacuum in power. We don't have a president. It's been 2 years. They didn't elect a president, so the country is like headless, and we don't have a prime minister that is really effective in a way, in political way. And the chamber, the elected chamber, has not been elected, actually. It's been automatically renewed every 4 years. So we don't have elections. So the political stalemate is like, it's like never been like this before. We're really running out of time in terms of running the country. And that's a real problem. And the main problem is the presence of almost 2 million Syrian refugees on the... in Lebanon, which is a 5 million people country, and we have 2 million refugees in the country. So it's floating. It's everywhere.
it's impressive. That's over a third of the population are refugees in Lebanon.
Yes, including the fact that we had almost a million Palestinians from the 1948 war that are still in Lebanon, so living in camps. And now we have like camps for the Palestinians and camps for the Syrians.
How does that work? And
it doesn't work. you see those people everywhere. They work. They do have some activities. Mm-hmm. And the richest one, the one that came first when the war broke out in Syria, actually rented houses and nice apartments in Beirut and like the. I would say people who can afford paying for rent, And for the rest, they live under tents in some areas of the Bekaa Valley, which is the eastern part of Lebanon. But it's complicated because they're like there's a lot of people and a lot of kids, and so the Lebanese government decided to send a lot of those kids to school, and because they had to go to school. So there's like a lot of problem in terms of how do you manage all these people and how do you pay for what where they stay and what they eat and then what they do and where they go to school. And so, yes, it's a burden for the country. And Lebanon's already like a broken economy. And so it's the problems have really like turned into, I wouldn't say worse. I mean, if I talk about like the 2006 war, in terms of bringing the country to the verge of a complete failure, complete destruction, I would say the war was better in a way than what happened in Syria and brought those 2 million people in the country. And especially because now the political stalemate, Syria used to be the power broker in Lebanon. So all decisions used to come from the Syrian government. Like politicians would go to Syria, get the orders and come back to Lebanon and implement them. Now we don't have like these people anymore. So so nobody's taking any decision because it's a complete, it's a check. Like everybody's a check. It's like playing a game. Nobody has more power than the other. So nobody's taking any decisions. And the most obvious, I think you heard about it, the most obvious element of this stalemate is the fact that the garbage has not been picked in Lebanon since July. We have now what we call a river of garbage.
Oh,
They piled up the garbage on empty roads. And they don't know what to do with the garbage anymore. There's so much garbage. I mean, it's been almost 8 months that they didn't. I mean, they do pick the garbage, but they put it everywhere. We don't have like a landfill or we don't export the garbage. We keep it and we pile it in some places under the bridges, on empty roads, on empty fields, on the parking lot, near a supermarket. And it's like huge mountains of garbage everywhere. And it's a real health hazard. And it's very dangerous for the population in a way, especially now because the summer is going to, the temperatures will go warmer. And there's a lot of gas. And also because when it rains, it goes down the earth. And it pollutes all the water that we drink and everything. So, yes, it's the situation is really bad.
Oh dear!
So it was better in 2006, actually.
Oh dear!
10 years ago.
I know you're not a politician, you're not a policymaker, not researching into it. But do you have any thoughts about how the future is going to be?
It's a standby because we are waiting for what will happen in Syria, because Syria is like a main influence in politics in Lebanon, and Lebanon is divided now in two camps, I would say, the pro Saudi Qatar camp, Turkey camp, I would say, and on the other side the Iranian Russian Syrian camp. So who's going to win the war in Syria will win the battle in Lebanon. So now today, it seems like the Iranian, Russia, Syria axis is like gaining momentum on the situation, especially because the US have withdrawn from the situation and we don't see much influence in terms of supporting the opposition in Syria, especially that the opposition has turned into more like an Islamic opposition and turned into what the Al-Qaeda things. And and then there's the Daesh, which is something else. That's another problem that comes from mainly from Iraq, but has invaded most of Syria and is supported by Saudi Arabia and Qatar and these countries and even Turkey. So it's Lebanon is exactly right in the middle of the conflict that is taking place in the whole Middle East between, I would say, the Iranian axis and the Saudi axis. And it's some sort of a world war, if you think about it. And so many countries are involved, especially Western countries and Turkey and Iran and Saudi Arabia and Russia and Iraq and Syria. It's like a world war actually going on, but it just takes place in Syria.
Personally, how are you feeling about all this?
The thing is, we thought in the beginning that the revolution against the Arabic regimes, like what happened in Egypt or Tunisia, or would happen the same in Syria, and we'd get rid of the dictatorship of the Assad family. Mm-hmm. But then it turned out that there are other, I would say, interests in at play, especially gas and oil and all these things like going between Turkey and Iran and Saudi Arabia. So we are stuck in the middle of a very, very big conflict. And we were expecting that this conflict would end by someone winning, but it seems like nobody's winning in the end. And nothing's moving anymore. So as Lebanon is expecting to get some... To get out of this situation, we are waiting for the situation to evolve into something that we will be able to read in a way. But we don't have any indication of what is going on. We know that in Iran now the elections have brought up more, I would say, more open-minded government, I would say. But, you know, in Iran it's always relative to what we call conservative and progress. And in Saudi Arabia now there's a problem with the collapse of the regime and the influence of Saudi Arabia. And America is waiting for the elections, and Russia has Putin in power, and so there's more like a military option. So we're waiting and nothing is coming. So we have those refugees, we have a completely stale and completely blocked political situation in the country. We have a lot of economical problems because of the refugees, but also because of the situation, like the garbage and the economy. And so we're just waiting. We're waiting for something to happen, or someone to take a decision, or someone to win a war, or just to make things, to remove the deadlock that we have in this country.
Oh, that's, yeah, it's not a good picture. I hesitate.
No, definitely not.
I hesitate to look 10 years in the future, because I don't know if we'll be doing this podcast 10 years in the future.
But we will.
Oh, I don't know. But I really, really hope that there is better news, and that you don't have to wait 10 years for better news, really, honestly.
No, but if you think about it, our everyday life is okay. I mean, I take my car in the morning, I go to the office, I take my kids to school, we have enough to eat, and even if it's not that clean, because we have now a real problem with the garbage. But I would say some people in other countries and other places can have like a more difficult life than the one I have in this place. But the fact that Lebanon is surrounded by countries with problems, I would say Israel in the south and Syria on the east, we are like living on an island. So every time you want to go somewhere, you have to take a plane. Okay, there's no way you can drive out of the country, and so you feel a little bit like isolated. And at some point, now every time we get a little bit of money in our pocket, we travel. Yeah. We go to France. We go to now. I'm going to the States in a few weeks, because we really need to take like go out of the country to breathe fresh air and to have this feeling that the world is like it's still existing outside of Lebanon. Yeah. There's still anybody out there, and you're not just locked into this place and waiting for somebody to come and help you.
Yeah.
And that's a difficult situation, especially because it's a country that could be super cool and super. We have a lot of very bright people, and a lot of my students they're really into technology. And now we have the ArabNet, and it's a conference, and all the technology and all the IT and everything. And it's you know, there's a lot of potential, but it's we're stuck in so many problems at the same time, and all the problems come with a problem on top, and it's a never ending situation of a stalemate and blockade. And, anyway,
well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak.
And you're welcome.
So nice to speak with you again after all this time. And I really, really wish you well. And
thank you very much.
Yeah, well, keep in contact. And
yes, of course.
I
yeah, and if anybody wants to have like any news from Lebanon, I would say we have a lot of information on the internet, and that is available for, and especially because bloggers, and we have like platforms to explain the situation, not just look at the news that you see on television in your countries, and because the situation is sometimes very different seen from abroad than what the reality of what we live in this place. So send us emails or go on blogs. blogs and everything, and just ask for questions on. And I really enjoy talking to you because you're searching for the real the real feel of what is going on in this place, and not so many people do that. Actually, they watch TV and they see that now we have Daesh and the Islamic State and everything like that, and it's we're like a part of the world where there's like a very big sickness and nobody wants to go anymore. You know, we feel a bit like in the quarantine and at some point in politically and socially and economically, you know? So it's good to have people reaching for us. We feel like, wow, cool.
The common thread from Indra and Stefan seems to be that you shouldn't just rely on what you read in the newspapers or see on TV. So how about making contact with people that you wonder about? It's never been easier from a technological point of view. And don't forget the resources in your own backyard. What about those neighbours that you never speak to, or the owner of that shop down the road whose accent you never really recognised? If you want to take this further, we're building up a bank of resources for becoming more interculturally aware on our website at www.absolutely-intercultural.com. Thanks to all the wonderful people who've talked to us over the last 10 years. Without you, there would be no show. And thank you for listening over the last 10 years. Please don't stop commenting, giving us ideas for future shows, or taking a look at the links we put up on our Facebook page. We'd also really appreciate some reviews on the iTunes page. The next show will be coming to you from Germany with Laurent Borgmann on the 1st of April, and that's no joke. So until then, stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.